everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson. And, you know, at the start of these episodes, I usually say that I have a very special guest. But it's especially true this time, because I am joined by the God Emperor of War Machine, William Hungerford himself.
I'm not special, man. Like, I think I've been on more podcasts with you throughout the years than anyone else. So, like, at this point, you know, it's just like, yeah, here he is again. What's up? Let's just talk about things, I guess.
I guess. So.
And was that a Dune reference, or was that a 40K reference? Which way were you going with that?
Oh, that's obviously a Dune reference, Will. Okay. So, for those people who are unaware of their Sovereign Lord, can you give an introduction, Will?
Sure, yeah. I'm going to need you to stop calling me that, though. I am the lead developer at Privateer Press. So I work on the rules for a variety of games. I am primary lead on War Machine and Hordes and Riot Quest. But I also provide assistant development on Warcaster and Monpok and all the other stuff, because that's kind of how we do things. There's a dev lead on each project, or the person who kind of like pitches the new ideas and is trying to say, like, when things will come out or what things should come out, and they draft the designs and they control the playtest and, you know, kind of say they're the final say on what comes out. But we all work on each other's projects. So whereas, like, Jason Souls is the head of Warcaster, like, I've definitely playtested that game a ton and been like, here's some language. And he's done the same with War Machine and Oz. You know, we all kind of like coexist and make things work. So. Just because I've heard some, the reason I'm kind of explaining that a little bit more is I've heard a little bit of confusion about how the process works. So just making sure Okay. Everybody kind of gets it. Like, you know.
Everyone knows how the sausage is made.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, if I was head on Monpok, there would be a B faction immediately. But I can't do that because Oz is the head of Monpok.
Well, this leads to the logical follow up. Why has there not been a B faction in War Machine or Riot Quest yet?
So. As I mentioned, like, there's the lead, right, on each project, and we kind of have to say on these rules, but ultimately, above us all, is Matt. So it all starts with pitching things to Matt, or Matt telling us there's things he wants to see. And so B faction, I can feel it in my bones. If I went to Matt with a B faction, I probably wouldn't have a job anymore. So I've just decided not to do it.
So before we start.
Yes. Don't do it.
The main reason that we are getting together is to discuss the keynote that you did yesterday.
Okay.
And is it true that on top of like this coronavirus that is ravaging Washington and Seattle, that there's just been like this severe razor shortage and you've given up all hope on ever shaving again?
Good. I thought you were going for a dank dune meme.
Oh, that's coming next.
God. Look, I grow facial hair terribly. like a prepubescent werewolf. It just comes in strange patches that I don't understand. But every now and then, I try and just let things like grow a little bit. So I had shaved down before the keynote. I'm just seeing what happens. I'm just seeing if I can grow a beard. Is that possible? The answer is no. But I'm going to try.
Okay. Well, I love your eternal optimism, Will.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely eternal. It never runs out. The only thing that could ever hurt it would be a dank dune meme.
Okay, well, let's do it. So, in this meme, we have Paul Atreides. This version of him is from the 80s.
I thought you said Paula Atreides.
Yeah.
I don't know who Paula is.
Paul, P-A-U-L.
Oh. Well, tell me more about Paula. Atreides.
Paul Atreides. So he's in his still suit. He has his glowing blue eyes. And then for the meme, inserted on his face is a pair of hipster eyewear. And the caption says, "I'm into sandworms. You've probably never heard of them. They're pretty underground."
Oh, God. God, it's such low-hanging fruit.
I had to go, like, we're out of practice on the Dune meme, so I had to go on kind of just like a nice lob over the plate for you. And
well, also, like, lately, the last few before that have been, like, really intricate ones that, like, reference, like, page 364, paragraph 2. And if you knew that specific bit of it, you'd get the meme. And everyone else is like, I literally have no idea what the hell is going on.
Well, I thought I would give you a little neophyte version.
Well, I hate it, so I hate all of them. Thanks.
All right, well, so...
That's it. We're done.
We're done. So the real quick, the format, we're going to chat with each other for 45, 50 minutes in this first part, and then the second part will be about the same length. And turns out we have lots of questions from the patrons.
Oh.
As to be expected.
And so one of these is patron only, right?
Yeah, the bonus episode is patron only.
Is that the spiciest of the two episodes?
This first one's going to be pretty spicy. I think there's going to be a fair number of questions that you're like, no comment, I cannot answer this question.
Oh, man, my favorite kind. I can't wait.
All right.
Question one. I'm kind of a big deal in my meta. Why do you hate Scorn?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Question one is from No Howard. Mm-hmm. He says, when does Will think regular live streaming will resume? I miss everyone.
I miss everyone, too. And if I had the crystal ball on when the COVID situation is going to be smooth enough that you get back together.
You'd be a billionaire?
I'd be a billionaire. I mean, the answer is we'll get back together when it's safe, which there's no telling. It's everyone needs to wear masks and stay inside as much as they can, but they're just not. So I don't have an answer to that.
Okay. Next question is from... Tokenator.
Mm-hmm.
So these, that last question and the next three questions are questions that were all submitted before the keynote, and then the rest will be post keynote. So,
yeah.
This one was asked before we had some info from the keynote.
Okay.
It says, will future War Machine release waves go the Kickstarter route like the Warcaster and Riot Quest ones?
So the answer is, you know, no. And I definitely recommend, if you're listening to this and you haven't had a chance to catch the keynote, it's all available on YouTube. If you go to youtube.com/privateerpressprime, you can watch the individual teaser trailers and dance to Tony's jamming beats because his music choices were on fire. Or you can also just watch the entire keynote. And there is information outside of those videos that's in the keynote. Like, for example, when we did the War Machine section, I believe the War Machine video itself is about 2 minutes long. But then we showed off stills of concept art and talked about upcoming model blocks and so on. It was just me and Oz kind of doing the talking head stream where you could observe how poorly my beard grows in. But no, Kickstarter is going to happen on certain projects and others it won't. It's not happening on the upcoming War Machine stuff. It's not happening on the upcoming Mompok stuff. It is happening on the beginning of Riot Quest Season 2, which is on Kickstarter right now, by the way. So I recommend you go check it out. It's happening on Warcaster, the next bit, and it's happening on the IKRPG 5e compatible series that's coming out. So it just depends.
All right, so next question is from Combat. He says, what is your and or Privateer Press's view on online platforms such as Wartable and Vossal?
Is it pronounced Vossal? I thought it was pronounced Vassal.
I mean, you say Vossal, I say Vassal, whatever.
Sure. I cannot speak to Privateer Press's official view. I can speak to my own. I obviously want people to play in person more than anything else. And as we talked about in the keynote about the CID, we did not want to use any third-party programs as the only way to do a CID because there's people that simply don't want to. They don't want to learn the hotkeys and the different ways, and it's just not how they want to play the game. And we couldn't accept only online battle reports and not other people's because then the people who weren't playing online would feel left out. And so, you know, we make tabletop games. We want people to play on the tabletop. So in a perfect world where we're all able to get together and go to stores and hang out and play games, that is by far what I personally want to see everyone doing. We're in strange times, you know, and if it comes down to you can't play at all or we have a way that's temporary fix to be able to play for the people that want to do it that way, you know, I'm glad that that option exists. I'm glad that people can still enjoy the game they love so much and they can still maintain the feeling of community and get together in some capacity. But it is definitely not a replacement for sitting across from each other and, you know, being able to throw your dice at your opponent if you need to, which is very important to me. It's bad sportsmanship and it'll get you kicked out of a tournament immediately, but, you know, I can't be DQ'd from tournaments. So I just really like the tactile feel. And to me, the greatest travesty would be in like a bizarro world where that's how the game became, like that it only got played in that manner, because playing miniatures games with miniatures is like a huge part of it to me. Right. So I'm glad that it's a safe way for people to enjoy things during the pandemic, though. And I'm absolutely grateful for that, that people can do this and stay safe.
Okay. So next question from Greylord Dave. Mm-hmm. He says, thank you so much for Fiora 4, both for her final version and the changes made between when her rules were first spoiled and her final release.
Mm-hmm.
The soft touch approach to rules development on Fiora 4 and Azazello has been really refreshing after hardcore CID. Mm-hmm. Is this likely to continue once/if CID restarts? And he says, by soft touch, I mean the rules were spoiled, the community reacted, and then changes were made.
Okay. Yes, that is how I prefer to do things, but I can't guarantee it'll always be that way. So whenever I post spoilers of playtest rules in an insider or online, it is not a secret CID of any kind. Like, often those rules don't change. I think Malvin and Mayhem, for example, just didn't change at all. And that will often be the case. But sometimes we do get a lot of feedback and I do pay attention to it. And if there is something that's particularly useful, I will immediately go to testing it and try it out. And if it does provide a better experience, then, you know, we'll integrate it. So when it comes to actual CIDs where we're purposely calling, where we're soliciting for feedback, I still want to have that same approach in how changes are made. Like, get the feedback and then just make a few little tweaks. My intent is that by the time anyone sees rules, playtest rules, that they're kind of at the final stage of beta. They're at the, we could print these if we wanted to, but like, check it out and let us know what you think, so that any alterations are not necessarily a redesign, but more of soft touch, as you put it. I would say the biggest one that was not the case for, the exception to that, would have been Brug. Brug mostly stayed the same, but his battle plans got some significant overhaul. And a large part of that was from feedback. And we tried a few things and realized we were just kind of making a better play experience and a better model. So, but I definitely like the Fiora Azazello style of just, you know, turn this one dial if possible.
All right. So the next of the questions are post keynote.
Post keynote.
Yes. All right, so first question from Imperial.
Uh-huh.
He says,
whatever, you laugh like that, I know I'm in for something.
Yeah, we're in for something. Do you know if Privateer Press is worried about getting into endless cycles of Kickstarters, like, say, Cool Mini or not? And are you concerned about cutting out local game stores?
Is Privateer Press concerned about it? I'm not sure how to answer that, because I don't think they'd be concerned if, you know, that's the decision that the owners and management have decided to make. I do know that still, like, it's not like these things are Kickstarter exclusive, right? Like, they're still going to stores and there are retailer pledges. And often a lot of people, instead of doing individual pledges, do a pledge through their store, which those options all exist. They existed in Warcaster and there's retailer pledges in the current Riot Quest one. And then, you know, I think our approach is definitely not to be, it comes out on Kickstarter and that's the only way you can get it, because, you know, 9-10 months down the road, how does a new player come into the game and then get the models that were in that Kickstarter? They have to go to a local store to pick them up, and getting new players in is the lifeblood of any game. So there's definitely still got to be support for stores and making sure that, you know, they've got options within the Kickstarter and that they're supported once the Kickstarter is long gone, once, you know, the game has been kickstarted. And I mean that not in the sense of the program, but like, it's up and running and the product's out there and it continues to keep hitting the market as it turns. That's all on the store level. And, you know, I don't think the company has any plans to stop supporting that.
It is kind of a real quick, I guess I'll interject something here, because I've had a lot of people who have approached me as a retailer and they're like, you know, what do you think of these Kickstarters, et cetera? And, like, I don't think that there's, any retailer or customer who's like, man, I'm super excited that this Kickstarter is happening, or that I just super love the platform of Kickstarter. That's generally not the sentiment that people have. But I guess there's two things that are, I guess, in the forefront of my mind when I'm thinking about these things. The first one is that, first of all, I want Privateer Press to be financially healthy. I want them to be around. I want them to be able to create awesome things that I love for a long time. And if part of that means launching certain things on Kickstarter, then great. I need Privateer Press to succeed. And the other thought that I've had with it is, and some people may not think about this maybe, but as someone who, as a co-owner of Muzon Minis, I'm very aware of, like, you know, we, for example, Adepticon didn't happen, and the revenue that Muzon Minis usually makes at Adepticon is a super important part of our business plan and our sustainability, etc. And so, for example, I feel pretty confident that this Winter Wasteland. Mm-hmm. Did I say that?
Wintertime Wasteland. You almost got
That this would have been debuting at Gen Con, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. It was supposed to be at Gen Con.
Right. And so, and Privateer Press has been doing, like, kind of, here's this pre-release thing at a convention that you can have an early window at, and then it's available at retailers. And the way that I'm trying to kind of view things is, this is kind of a similar thing happening with them putting Wintertime Wasteland on Kickstarter. It's similar to them selling it early at Gen Con. And I don't know. I think that I guess I'm curious what your reaction is to those two thoughts or insights on stuff.
No, I mean, like, I definitely not having a con season has hurt a ton. And you're very right. Like, a lot of the big companies, a lot of the mid-level and smaller companies, that's one of the things I worry about, is a lot of these smaller independents, a lot of friends of mine that you know, they would do a specific kind of very specific product, right? A supplemental product and maybe even a niche product. And going to a con, and especially the big boys like Gen Con, is often an amazing source of revenue for them. And I worry about what the landscape's going to look like in a year from now. Like, we basically missed an entire year of conventions. And yeah. I do think that Kickstarter can help supplement that loss. But, you know, I understand there's not a Gen Con this year, and for all the right reasons, right? We obviously couldn't have done it. But, like, I'm like, what is it going to look like next year? Like, if the pandemic's over and we're able to get together in big groups again by then, but God, I hope so. But, like, how many people are going to make it? And yeah, it's a scary time, not just in our industry, but in any entertainment industry right now, because, like, not many people are getting out. And especially when you have a form of entertainment, like a board game or, you know, a tabletop game or anything that requires, like, face-to-face interaction, it's real scary. So, you know, Kickstarter is a way to help make sure that a lot of those projects can see the light of day and reach more people and get out there and be a thing and be real, instead of possibly never being real.
Yeah, I mean, we can. Well, I guess this is another, like, side diversion or whatever, but there was a little bit of, so we were with the USAWTC teams. There was a little bit of upset, people who were upset over some decisions we made, where basically we decided that the people who qualified this year, we're just going to roll them over. They'd already paid some deposits, et cetera, and they'll just be the teams that are eligible to go next year to the WTC. And,
sure.
And it's kind of a, there's like a no-win situation a little bit going on where, you know, on the one hand, there's these people who've paid deposits. On the other hand, there's people who, you know, would like a chance to try to qualify for the teams next year. And then there's also the people who run the ATC at Adepticon, who, you know, the winning that event qualifies you for We've done it previously. That qualifies that team to be on the WTC, and that's something that draws people to come to the event. And so there's a lot of kind of emotions on both sides, and justifiably so. But I'm also just kind of sitting here like, what are the odds that Adepticon's going to happen next year or the WTC? Like, at what point is Europe going to want Americans to be traveling over in Europe? So, yeah. I don't know. It's
a weird time. 2020 is just the weirdest year. I'm ready for it to be over. Let's just skip forward. Let's pull a Haley and go jump into 2022 and see how things look.
Okay. The next question. Uh-huh. So this is some more questions from Imperial. He says, number one, is there any balance issue that you are concerned about in War Machine / Hordes that you could share?
I mean, I have a whole list of things that I will be fixing next time there's a dynamic update, but most of them, like, it's a really broad question. Because there's things that I want to, like the Legion CID. They have this huge list of models that are getting into that CID. Those are obviously all balance things that I wanted to address. There is a Storm Division focused dynamic update that is delayed because of everything that's going on right now. That is some Storm Division models that I want to mess around with. And then there's just like little minor fixes to bits and bobs of different things. Sometimes their rules clean up. Sometimes their interactions cleans up. But like, is there a massively oppressive problem that I think has to get fixed right now? No. I don't think the game is in any sort of broken state by any means. I think the game is in a overall very good state in terms of rules fidelity. But I don't think there will ever be a point where there isn't something we want to fix, because the line is so big that we would just have to say a hard cutoff date and be like, and we're done. And as soon as we did that, right, we're like, oh man, I really wish I had done this to Manhunters. Or I wish that I had gone back and made the field mechanics do this. The line's too big and there's always going to be something out there.
All right. So his second question, mm-hmm. he says, I've been concerned personally about Agathon as a bad play experience when you face it. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to get a perspective from you.
Sure. I mean, Infernals are very powerful. They're obviously one of the top tournament viable factions. Something that we've had their eyes on since they came out. It's something I'm continuing to monitor. I'm always very trepidatious after a faction has gone through a full CID, especially when it wasn't something I was in the lead of and it all got approved and it all came out. And then immediately going back and sort of nerfing it to retroactively, fix things that I think need to be fixed. So I'm definitely in the gathered data aspect of Infernals. To make sure that any changes that do get made are grounded in, like, this has got to be the right thing. But the amount of data that we're getting right now is obviously very low. Like, there is no Adepticon results. There's no Gen Con results. There's no lock and load results. There's the online ones, but those are a portion of things. And there's nobody playing in local steamrollers and so on and so forth. So the other problem right now is a lot of dynamic updates that might occur. And these are things that don't go through CID. Have to be based purely only on our internal playtesting, which I'm completely confident in. But there are larger things that I'd like to get more information on. So, Infernals are very strong. Do I think that they're unbeatable? And do I think that they are ruining the meta? No, I don't. They're one of the top boogeymen right now, and there's always going to be a boogeyman. But if we're going to change anything, I got to make sure it's right. And again, the kind of changes I like to make are, I like to point at things like Harbinger with the nerf that was made there and stuff like that. I don't like personally to do big sweeping redesigns to bring power level down. I like to just make soft touches that just bring things more in line with stuff. So looking at Agathon and figuring out what exactly what of her kit is causing the most oppression and should it be removed? Should it be altered? So if anything, I'm not even saying it has to happen yet. I don't know that there's been enough games fully against Infernals at a high level competitive event yet since their release. And it's been over right at a year now to mm-hmm. sort of make those final determinations.
So his original question was about Agathon. You kind of mentioned Infernals in general, Are there, besides potentially Agathon, is there anything with Infernals that's potentially on your radar or things that you're potentially watching?
I'm always watching. The thing I'm always watching in Infernals is the summoning economy, because it was one of my top concerns from day one. And right. And that's a big one that I don't want to have to mess with at all, because right. it's so core to how it works. And so it's like, if the summoning economy is proving to be, you know, meta busting, what do you change? How do you fix that? And then also just the overlaying buffs that Infernals can bring, you know, the long shadow style effects and things like that. Just making sure that it's not too many layers to where there is no counterplay. And that's the big thing we always look for. Is there counterplay? Is there a way to get around it? Is there player agency and how you can go about defeating it? Or is this the kind of army that you make one mistake and you're immediately dead? And is that true for multiple iterations of the same matchup? And is that the majority of matchups? So I would say the last thing I want to have to ever touch is summoning, but it is one of the things I'm watching the most to see what the effect is having on things.
All right. So next question. These are the final ones from Imperial. He says, are there new maps coming out for Riot Quest beyond Temple of Concord and the new Dark Prince? Will we see more expansions like the gear expansion, boss fight, etc.?
Yes. Yeah, there will be more maps. There will be more expansions. And today, Matt hinted a little bit at who the boss of Season 2 might be. But it's not necessarily exactly what you think. I'm just going to say that he mentioned the name Karchev, and saying that he's heard something weird's happening with Karchev. I think when people see what the Season 2 boss ends up being, which is not part of this Kickstarter and will be later on, it's going to blow their minds. But yeah, there will be more maps. There'll be more expansions. There'll be more than just the heroes.
Okay. So next question is from Dragon Pup. Mm-hmm. He says, can you tell us anything about the upcoming House Elowir block? Aside from the new caster, will there be more unit solos, legacy changes, etc.? Will it be its own theme?
So I can tell you that, block-wise, expect around the same size as you're seeing for the Legion and Troll ones. It will have a CID. It will have legacy changes integrated into that. Too early to reveal whether or not there'll be a new theme just for it. There will be a new unit for sure. Pretty beefy and big unit, I might add. The new releases aside from the Warjack that's coming are all House Elowir. They all have the House Elowir either in their name or in their subtype. And that's really the part of it we want to explore, and we want to make sure that somebody who has the previous House Elowir models and likes Thyron can build a list. So I don't want to say anything just yet about the theme force. Wait and see.
All right. So
will the Trident get nerfed?
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. will Ambush be added back to Shadows?
Dun dun dun. Dun, dun. Dun.
All this and more coming in 2021.
All right. So next question from Grey Lord Dave, and starts off with him saying, I feel really bad for asking this.
Oh, it's a good sign.
And I guess I know the answer. But I've asked you before about international distribution, and you said that you were working on it, but at ground level, it feels like nothing has changed. I suspect that this is because of the COVID pandemic, and I wouldn't blame you for saying this and or that it isn't really your area. But I really want to give Privateer Press my money, and it's been really difficult to do so for quite a while, especially because I love Fiora 4, and a proxy Fiora 2 is only good for so long. Is Privateer Press still working on international distribution, and when can we expect things to be resolved?
I mean, the 100% honest answer is I don't have those answers. As a member of development, I'm just not involved in things like international distribution, logistics, and shipping. I know from the marketing meetings that I attend with the rest of the company that, you know, Bob Watts, our CEO, Matt Wilson, the owner, chief creative officer, that this is a thing I hear talked about, and is like, you know, that them saying, oh, we have to talk about this thing, we have to talk about that thing, but I'm not necessarily privy to all that information. So it is a topic I know is being discussed. But as for like what those specifics are, A, it probably wouldn't be my place to say, but B, I just legit don't know them. So I would say if you can ever get one of the higher ups on for an interview, they would be much better positioned to say, to have those kind of answers.
Yeah. I mean, that actually would be pretty interesting to try to have Matt or Bob on and see if either of them would be what type of info they have.
Yeah. I mean, I can talk to you about, I can talk to you about game rules all day. I can talk to you about like where, what kind of models we want to make and all that kind of stuff. But if someone's like, hey, my mispack got shipped out 3 months ago and I haven't seen it, how do I fix it? I want to help you. Cause like you said, like you're like, you want to buy Fiora 4. I want you to buy Fiora 4. I want you to play with that model. Like that's what I want. I just don't, I don't know how.
I'll say real quick, and granted, this isn't necessarily super related as a American retailer, but I know that it's he mentions the COVID stuff, and like I know Privateer Press is trying their best with the COVID stuff, and I've still been getting some restocks, but from what little I know, for domestic production, it's like you just can't have a warehouse or a production facility that's full of people right now. And you know, they're still doing some work. Go ahead. Yeah.
When I went to the keynote yesterday, when I went to the office, and so when you're at the new offices, one side of the building is where like marketing and graphic design and development is. And then on the other side of the building is where studio, like Jordan and painting and engineering stuff happens. And sort of in the middle is the warehouse where all the production and the shipping and the packaging happens. So I went to my office to go take care of a few things. I wanted to get ready for the Legion CID. And then I was going through the middle because Tony's studio is like dead center in the middle of the building. It's this huge room that he has set up so that we hear the least amount of noise from all the stuff going on in the warehouse. And there were people in the warehouse yesterday. Like there were people casting and packing and getting things put together. And I saw boxes of, you know, I just glanced over and saw boxes of Malvin and Mayhem, just like a huge stack of them getting packed and put together. So there's definitely people in the warehouse working right now. But Jay said, everyone there was social distanced and like had masks on, and you can't have a warehouse that's full of capacity right now for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, I mean it's difficult. I know that, you know, Bob and some of the team have been trying to work on some things, and I'm sure it's frustrating for them that some of the things that they would likely like to implement are a little bit tough to get rolling right now. All right, so Lido the second, Lido 2, says, do Wintertime Wasteland releases include at least one playable faction for each War Machine / Hordes faction? If no, which factions do not get any?
So are we talking specifically the Kickstarter releases or the entire season?
Sure.
Because, yeah, they've only seen the first half, right? Because the Kickstarter is like the first mega wave of Wintertime Wasteland. Like there'll be more Wintertime Wasteland models afterwards. So if you didn't see your faction represented in these models, that doesn't mean it won't be represented in the back end. And also just by the nature of where it's taking place, it's all the Frozen North. Like it doesn't mean everybody's going to show up. But what I'd recommend is as of today, as of July 8th, Travis Marg reached out to me for information about who every model worked for and what their subtypes were and what theme first forces they went into. And he collated all that into a super cool little graph and a grid. And he wrote an insider that says what every single model works for, even breaking down not just factions, but theme forces you can put them in. And that's all available online right now. So check out that insider, which you can access through privateerpress.com on the front page. And you'll have it broken down right in front of you.
All right. So next we have Hybrid Monkey D.
Oh, God.
He says, I'm super excited for Requiem. I could ask a million questions, but I'll limit myself to just a few. First off, the original D20 material had a lot of flavorful changes to common D&D rules, such as limited resurrection magic, gods getting angry if you use their magics to heal those they deem unworthy, and specific class/race restrictions. Can we expect to see these rules within Requiem as well, or will it conform more towards 5th edition's ease of play philosophy?
Sure. So I can't talk to all the specifics because as an RPG, it's got a lot going on, but you will definitely maintain the flavor of the setting. Now, it is obviously a 5th ed compatible product. And with that, that does mean there's a lot of, like, you know, 5th ed's a very streamlined, very easy to pick up game, but it's got depth to it, right? And there are certain things that are going to change. There's certain things that, you know, I'd say if you're playing a Fellcaller, for example. So Fellcaller is a Bardic College archetype that I actually developed for the IKRPG just recently and submitted it. So to be a Fellcaller, you have to be a bard. When you hit 3rd level, you can choose Fellcaller. And you also have to be a Trollkin. It has a requirement that you must be of the Trollkin race to choose Fellcaller. And then you get all these cool Fellcall abilities and all these other different things you get to do as you level up to the archetype, like standard 5th head stuff. But at the same time, you get all the other bardic abilities, right? So that means you get, like, bardic spells. Now, if this was strictly, like, super hardcore IK, there aren't a lot of Fellcallers running around casting, like, illusions, right? Or casting bardic spells that you would see appear on that list. But you'll be able to hear. So there are certain loosenings of restrictions to make it all function within 5e. But we're going to make sure that enough of it keeps the flavor like you remember.
All right, so his second question is, will we be getting a new Monsternomicon? What's your favorite monster that you guys have developed so far?
Yes, the plan is for there to be a new Monsternomicon, the new, like, the core book. There's going to be adventure modules. Like, there's a lot of really cool stuff coming. And the favorite one monster that I worked on thus far was the Dracodile, which you can actually see in the video. If you pause the keynote video for the IKRPG, the Dracodile appears on the page, and that is the Dracodile stats that I converted. So here's the interesting thing about the 5e product is that a fair amount of it is original development, and then another good chunk of it is conversion from the 3.5 OGL and the Full Metal Fantasy stuff. So you will see a lot of, like, text and fluff reused because it's just the text and fluff that's sort of, like, built into the bedrock of what a character is. But you also see a lot of new stuff. You'll see updates on the lore of what's going on post Oblivion. And then rules wise, you'll see things that you're like, oh, I kind of remember this from the 3.5. And then you're going to see stuff that's completely, totally new. Like, I think the Oath of the Wall archetype I wrote, which is for anybody who wants to be a paladin of the Order of the Wall or to follow that oath, whether you're a midnight or not. Those rules are all really, really new. Like, you do a bunch of stuff that is very much just developed for 5e from the ground up. So it sort of depends.
All right. So next question. He says, firearms are an integral part of the Iron Kingdom setting. Can you provide some examples of how guns have been added to the existing 5e classes? Expanding that, will Gun Mage be getting its own class?
Well, I can't reveal if Gun Mage will be getting its own class, but I mean, it's pretty iconic to the setting. So I would say chances are pretty good. The follow-up is, yeah, I mean, how are guns being integrated? There's a lot of guns that already sort of exist, like flintlock pistols and things that you can find the basic rules for. And then the 5e rules of, you know, ammunition and reload and all that provides the foundation to build things off. But there's a lot of guns and firearm types in the Iron Kingdoms that are unique. And you're going to see these big weapon tables and armor tables and gear tables that are full of all kinds of stuff that is very, very specific to the Iron Kingdoms. I mean, a very simple example was, I can speak to one I worked on, a fighter martial archetype, which is Storm Knight. And when you become a Storm Knight, one of the first things that happens at 3rd level is, at 3rd level, it basically states that you've completed your training at the academy. And there's actually some stuff you have to do, like you have to swear loyalty to the crown and swear loyalty to Signar. And you have this path you can go on as a Storm Knight, which is that either say loyal to Signar and you get certain benefits, or you can become a renegade. You can kind of go the Savio style, or you can retire. And then there's certain other benefits you don't get, but you get other things. It kind of depends on which way you want to go. But when you, at 3rd level, when you complete your training, if you go back to Signar and swear your loyalty, you get a free piece of gear. Like basically as the crown and the academy gives you the type of storm weapon you've been trained with. And there's multiples. And so like the storm thrower is one of them. And that's more of a ranged style weapon. So you're going to see unique range guns that are absolutely just IK only.
All right. So his final question, how will the mechanically adept combatants be represented? Bodgers, Iron Heads, Arcane Mechanics, and also Alchemists.
Well, some of them will be subclasses, and some of them will be their own classes. Some of them will be races, like, you know, gobbers are just kind of mechanically adept by themselves, not necessarily meaning they're all great at it, but there'll be racial bonuses, so that some people are just more adept at it naturally. But you will be able to customize. I mean, if you feel like making yourself a Rulic mechanic, you will likely be able to do so. So that's kind of too broad a question because there's going to be so many different approaches to becoming a mechanically adept character and how you can do about it and whether it's literally the only thing you do, like as your main class, or whether it's part of what you do. Like an alchemist, I would consider to be part of like maybe a rogue or even a ranger, depending on the way it gets approached. So you'll see.
All right. I guess a deeper question on the D&D stuff. I know that you have a deep love of role playing yourself. You run some very quite intricate campaigns yourself.
Yes.
So how much are you being involved in the development of this new game?
The development is myself, Oz, and Getz. And Oz is sort of project managing and assigning what needs to get done. Obviously Matt Getz is an absolute wonder to work with, and he is so great and has so much experience doing RPG development that he's, you know, going to be taking care of a lot of stuff. But yeah, I mean, so far I've finished like, in terms of just, let's say just subclasses and archetypes, I want to say maybe like just short of a dozen. Like I would say Oz and Getz are the most involved and I am right behind. And that the reason for that is I have a lot of my time weekly that I have to dedicate to War Machine and Hordes and Riot Quest. So I have sort of an hour breakdown of how many hours a week I want to spend, and that fluctuates up and down. And I don't typically work 40 hours a week. I usually work more, you know, just to get things
more.
Done. Yeah. To get things done. And, so I would say the least amount of my time each week is spent on the RPG, but that is still a significant amount of time spent.
I love how like you, there was like this inflection in your voice where it was like, I don't want to think about like the number of hours that actually goes in each week. So I appreciate that, Will.
it comes with, like this, especially when you are a public facing developer, you're never off, right? You're never really sure off.
Yeah.
Because even on days when I'm done, I'll be getting texts from Infernals asking me rules questions, or something will blow up on the internet that I need to go pay attention to. So I don't really look at it that way. It's just more like how many hours am I sitting still and typing?
Sure. All right. Well, that is a good place to pause.
Ooh, so are we going into the patron only super spicy mode?
Soon, yeah. Before we do, everyone check out Muse on Minis, and everyone check out DiscountGamesInc.com. You can get everything you need for your gaming needs. And thank you, everyone, for supporting the podcast. And if you support the podcast, you can hear Part B, where we get even spicier questions.
Yes.
For Will.
And if you're not, RideQuest Kickstarter is happening right now. So you should become a patron of Jay. Jay deserves it. And you deserve to do this for Jay. But say that you won't.
You deserve it for yourself.
Yeah, you deserve it for yourself. But Jay deserves it more than you deserve it for yourself. But either way, whether you're being selfless or selfish, your choice. I'm not going to judge you either way. You do need to go to the Riot Quest Kickstarter page right now and pledge something. Okay, I'm done.
Okay. Well.
Sorry, I was trying to keep a straight face.
Awesome. Well, thank you for listening to everyone, and stay tuned to the next episode.